This is the audio version of the book Jailer by Acharya Vijay Abhishekar Suriji Maharaj in the voice of Rahul Kapoor Jain. Chapter 8, Petrol, Water. There was a fire in the building. It appeared as if the rising flames from the fire were trying to touch the sky. In that building lived two brothers who got into an argument. The elder brother blamed the younger brother. It was your mistake due to which the fire broke out. The younger brother was not to be outdone. He said, "How was it my mistake?" "It was definitely your mistake." The neighbors protested. "First, extinguish the fire." Both the brothers refused to do so, saying, "No, let us first resolve whose mistake it was. Then only shall we put off the fire." What should we call the brothers? Sane or insane? Where is the question? Both are mad because by the time it would be decided whose mistake it was, everything would be reduced to ashes. Then how would it matter whether one could conclude as to whose mistake it was? This fact suggests that the first duty is not to ascertain who erred. It is to put out the fire. The learned say that just as the fire can break out in the building, there can be fire of anger in one's soul. When such a fire breaks out, our first duty is to put an end to it. It is inopportune to say, "At that time, you abused me, so I retaliated with anger," in order to decide whose folly it was. Fire can be extinguished by sprinkling water over it. By fueling it with petrol, it becomes more inflamed. The same is true of the fire of anger. Which is that water which, when sprinkled, pacifies the fire of anger? And which is that petrol which stimulates the fire of anger? To summarize, what is it that acts as water for the fire of anger, and what is it that acts as petrol? Audience, forgiveness, equanimity is the water. Speaker, no, this is only the outcome. Pacification of anger itself is forgiveness or even-mindedness. But which water, when sprinkled, eases the agitation of anger? Acceptance of one's mistakes acts as water for the fire of anger, whereas blaming someone for the mistakes acts as petrol. All the leaders from different fields had called a meeting to which even you were invited. You had decided to wear your brand new white clothes. Since you were running late, you needed to hurry up. You asked the servant, "Put my handkerchief, wallet and pen in the pocket of my trouser." He did what he was told. As you were about to leave, you noticed a blue ink mark near the pocket. The servant had put the pen inside the pocket, but had forgotten to put the cap on properly. On seeing the blot, you lost your temper. A tight slap landed on the cheek of the servant. "You idiot! Why did you not close the cap properly?" Another time, on a similar occasion, it was you who had put the pen in the pocket, but had forgotten to close the cap tightly. In no time, the stain had shown up. You noticed it, but would you lose your temper like before? Would you also slap yourself with the same force? Why not? Is it because you're not angry with yourself? Why not? It is because you have realized your mistake. Let's say you were on a month-long trip. Your partner struck a deal due to which a loss was incurred. On your return, you learn about this bad decision and tell him, "Is this any way to do business? Why wasn't I consulted? Could you not have waited till my return? There has been a small loss this time. Tomorrow it could be a bigger one. This way we can become bankrupt soon." You become agitated in this setting. In an inverse situation, when the partner was away, you struck a deal and incurred a similar loss, upsetting your partner greatly. You tell him, "Why are you so upset? This is business and there are bound to be ups and downs in it. Sometimes losses will be incurred. Instead of fighting over it, we should pay attention to another deal so that we can recover our losses." How would we behave and what would our language be when it is someone else's mistake? And then, on realizing our own mistake, what would our deportment be? It is a holiday. A father and son were sitting on the chairs in the courtyard of their house reading newspaper. Suddenly, there was a noise from the kitchen of a glass jar falling and breaking. The father told the son, "Go inside and check who broke the bottle." The son, without going inside, replied, "It was mother." "Son, how would you know without checking?" "Father, I know this because there was no other sound after the jar broke." It is clear from these daily occurrences in one's life that when a person sees his own mistake, there is no fire of anger. On the other hand, the minute he starts seeing others' mistake, he cannot save himself from the fire of anger. For all the above matters, the example of Agni Sharma is like a litmus paper test for us. Agni Sharma had reached a forest where there were other austere ascetics practicing penance. The ascetics knew that Agni Sharma's month-long fast had not been broken with Aparna and were disconcerted at the thought. Some people were offended, others were displeased with Gunasen. However, Agni Sharma told them, "Let Gunasen, the devotee of the esteemed teachers, remain healthy. I have now not to worry about food. It is not going to matter to me whether my fast is broken or not." When Gunasen arrived at the hermitage, he was apprehensive about talking to the Kulapati about having missed the Parna. At that time, the Kulapati tells Gunasen, "Dear boy, an austerite is like everyone's mother. Why should you feel ashamed or hesitant to talk to him?" At the time of the second Parna, Agni Sharma arrived at Gunasen's place, but no one accorded him a welcome or gave him any attention. After waiting for some time, he returned without doing his Parna. In the meantime, Gunasen remembered that he had missed the Parna. Extremely upset, he started running towards the hermitage hurriedly. He met Agni Sharma on the way and requested him to return and give him the benefit to break his month-long fast. Agni Sharma at that point said, "The austerities are true to the vows. The austerities follow and protect their vows completely. They do not make any concessions. Therefore, I cannot come back for Parna. The austerities are even-minded about whether a Parna is done or not done. It has not made any difference to me that the Parna has not been done. I am as composed and happy as before." Let us reflect on Sri Haribhadra Swariji Maharaja's words on the third Parna being missed. Due to his ignorance of having not immersed his soul in the supreme path of attaining liberation, he became bound by Kashaya. His keenness to improve his next birth was completely destroyed, and so was his faith in the religion. In its place, animosity, which is like the root of the tree of unhappiness, was generated. Intense pangs of hunger caused him physical pain, making him covetous of food. He forgot the doctrine of karma taught to him by the Kulapati. That is why he was possessed by ignorance. To have missed his Parna thrice and as a result having to bear the affliction of pain and misery are all due to the deviousness of Karmasatta and not of Gunasen. Gunasen is merely a jailer. Such a thought process is Paramarth. To maintain equanimity as a consequence of his thought process is Paramarthic path, leading to the welfare of the soul and achievement of glorious future births. He fell short in assimilating with the path. He started thinking of Gunasen as guilty. Seeing Gunasen's mistakes, his anger was ignited. He became incensed. There ended his thought about his future lives or his faith in the religion. Enmity, which is the origin of all miseries, pains and afflictions, possessed his mind. The result of the litmus paper test is clear. Till his Parna was missed twice, he saw it as his own mistake and considered it as a fruit of his past karmas. His mind till then was calm, contented and pure. However, the third time that his Parna was missed, he started seeing it as a mistake on Gunasen's part. The fire of anger spread within him, which engulfed the peace and beauty of his mind, his composure and his happiness. Instead, his mind was soiled with the blackness of agitation, cruelty and a feeling of animosity. The virtuous souls of love and Kush were developing as fetuses in a womb of Mahasati Sita, as an effect of which Sitaji had keen desires like enforcing Amari Pravartan in the kingdom, having grand devotional festivals, doing Supatra Dan and undertaking pilgrimages. All these desires except for one, for going on a pilgrimage, had been fulfilled by Ramchandraji. In the meantime, people were blaming Sitaji. How could Sitaji's morality have remained unblemished since she had stayed at Ravana's place for such a long time? How long does it take for the gossip of such kind to spread like wildfire? When Ramchandraji heard of it, he decided to abandon Sitaji. He revealed his intention to the commander-in-chief of army, Krithantavadan. The chief prepared a chariot and requested Sitaji, "Devi, you have a desire to go on a pilgrimage. The chariot is ready for you, so kindly come and be seated." Sitaji, not suspecting anything, settled down in the chariot. The chief drove the chariot to the middle of a jungle and then abruptly stopped. "Brother, why have you stopped here? There is no tirth in the site here." The chief had tears in his eyes. He related everything to her. It was a very dense, uninhabited jungle. One could hear the roars of violent wild animals all around and creeping movements of poisonous snakes which could be heard. It was an uncertainty whether she would survive even one night in such a ruthless place. Sitaji was being abandoned to be all alone in the terrible jungle while she was pregnant. Who should be consoling whom? Should the chief be consoling Sitaji or should Sitaji be consoling the chief? The amazing thing was, on realizing her own mistake, Sitaji calmed the chief down, who was crying. "Brother, why are you crying? It is not your fault. You are just carrying out your duty by obeying your master's order, which is also my duty as a wife. How can you even blame the master? He is just performing his duty of satisfying his subjects who he rules over. Why even blame the subjects? These are the same subjects who had hailed me earlier by such names as Jagadamba, Mahasati, Sita Maya. No one is to be blamed. It is Karmasatta who is making them change their views." While returning, the chief asked Sitaji, "Do you have any message for Ramchandraji?" Even at that time, there was no sarcasm or abuse from Sitaji. Like, what kind of justice is this? You just heard one side and then ordered me to be banished? I should have been heard too. Besides, even a common man who wants to abandon his wife leaves her at her parental home. You are a great king, so you have the prerogative to leave your wife alone in the middle of the jungle. Your propriety is indeed praiseworthy." How could she be so calm, peaceful and collected? The answer is through Swabhul Darshan. When a person sees his mistake and prepares his mind to bear an affliction, fully realizing that it is my own mistake and that I have to bear the result of it, then it becomes easier to withstand the affliction. If a person who is walking is told that the distance to be traveled is 12 kilometers and if it turns out to be 15 kilometers, he would get annoyed. If he was told from the beginning that the distance is 15 kilometers, he covers it with ease because he is mentally prepared for it. This is to say that a person who admits his mistake is mentally prepared to bear the pain with ease and therefore is able to maintain his composure. When a person who sees others' mistakes thinks, "Why should I bear the consequences of his mistakes?" he is not only unprepared mentally to bear the pain, he also develops a mental inclination to avert the pain or resist it. Yet, it is not possible to avoid the pain. At that time, his ego gets hurt as his desire to avoid the pain is crushed. He experiences helplessness. All these forces makes his misery all the more unbearable. When an elder sister-in-law who is trying to avoid her own chores is forced to do even the younger sister-in-law's work, how painful would the situation seem to her? When the situation of undergoing pain presents itself, one is bound to experience agitation and confusion. When you think of someone as the root cause of all your troubles, he is going to appear to you only as an enemy. Who would be prepared to endure afflictions given by an enemy? There is no choice but to suffer them. This makes the soul perplexed. He becomes extremely impatient to get even, and therefore, till he is able to avenge himself, his mind is not at rest. Besides, he had committed the mistake way back in the past. Now there is no possibility of his diminution. Therefore, there is a mental acceptance of the fact on his part that it is not in his hands to reduce whatever he has to bear as a punishment. However, to a person who sees someone else as a perpetrator of his difficulties, the other person's present deeds in the form of a strange word or behavior only seems as a root cause of his afflictions. He believes that if these strange deeds stop, his afflictions would also lessen. His desire to see his afflictions reduced also prompts him to make an attempt in that direction. However, the other person does not relent, as the consequence of which his troubles continue. This situation becomes intolerable for him, and he starts considering the other person more wicked. His ego is hurt. His aim is only to see his pain alleviated. So when the pain starts becoming more intense instead of getting mild, it appears to be more and more unbearable. For all these reasons, his mind always remains angry. Sitaji always saw the fault of her own karmas. Therefore, she was absolutely calm and composed. She did not feel either displeasure or anger towards Ramchandraji. Is the gain of seeing his own faults any less grand that we would be foolish to see others' faults at its cost? She sends a beautiful message to Ramchandraji. O Master, you have forsaken me listening to people's hearsay. It does not matter. You will find a better life partner than me. Also, there is no dictum that your liberation will be withheld. These are people after all. Tomorrow, they may start slandering the Jain religion. Kindly do not forsake Jain religion by listening to them, because there is no other religion which is superior than or even equal to it. By abandoning it, the attainment of your liberation will definitely be obstructed. What magnanimous words! There was not a single word of complaint, sarcasm or abuse. Don't we all desire such composure of mind? Mungi Ben lived in the area of Shahpur in Ahmedabad. She had tremendous faith in Babji Maharaj. She would put a morsel of food in the mouth only after paying obeisance to him. If Babji Maharaj had already sat down to do a biyasna during the austerity of Varshitap, he would show his hand from behind the curtain. Mungi Ben would respectfully bow to his hand. As for her fate, she was married to a young man who had no faith in the religion. She came to live in Borivali in Mumbai. The husband had a disregard for the religion. He would get very angry when Mungi Ben visited the temple, or if she did a samayik or swadhyay, he would beat her for it. So she would perform all the above in her husband's absence. She had studied 6 karma granths and Kammapayadi. She would even teach others. One afternoon, she was reading the manuscript of Kammapayadi. Suddenly, the children warned her by shouting, "Kaki, Kaka has arrived." She quickly tied up the 400-page manuscript in a piece of cloth and put it on a shelf when she became aware of his untimely arrival. Her husband had seen the whole thing. His anger touched the roof. Closing the door behind him, he shouted, "Is this what you do behind my back?" And he started beating her mercilessly. He abused her, spoke outrageous words, took out his rage on the religion, and kept beating her over and over again. The children kept knocking on the door. "Open the door, otherwise we will break it." Yet he did not open it. Mungi Ben took refuge in Sri Hari Hant and her Gurudev in her heart. She knew it was not her husband's fault. He was not evil. It was her own karmas which were sinful. Therefore, there was no complaint or feeling of anger or offense on her part. The abuse and beating continued, and the terrible torture lasted for over an hour until he left for the office. However, before he left, he threw the transcript in a water tank. The neighbors came to check on her, but Mungi Ben was calm and composed, as if she had received only light slaps. When they looked for the manuscript in the water tank, they found it and were pleasantly surprised to see that not even the cloth in which it was wrapped had become wet. She had been beaten black and blue umpteen number of times without leaving any outward mark on her body. Yet she had nursed and taken care of her husband lovingly when he had contracted cancer at a later stage. One day he told her, "What should I call you? A wife, a mother, a goddess, a Bhagavati. I did not look back while torturing you. You never complained. On the contrary, you have always given me happiness. On my deathbed, what can I do to please you?" If you're really pleased with me, then pardon the person living in room number 4 in our chawl, who you have quarreled with. Tell him, Michchami Dukkadam. Isn't Mungibain an infallible example of how a person who sees the fault of one's own karma can remain composed and on given occasion can propose a beneficial solution even to a person responsible for her miseries with a compassionate heart? A person who can see one's own fault does not even find this surprising. The reason is very clear. He perceives someone's appropriate behavior towards him as an act of kindness and develops an affection and affinity for the person, whereas he sees someone's unfavorable behavior only as a fruit of his demeritorious karmas. Hence, he does not feel an iota of enmity towards that person. He considers everyone as his friend and no one as his enemy. Then how can the feelings of anxiety, fear, or worry come anywhere near him? The imagination that everyone around me is my friend and no one is my enemy is so delightful. The person who sees animosity in others' strange behavior themselves face harassment. Those who are able to see their faults stay calm and composed. This incident took place in Agra a few years ago. A widow worked hard to educate both her sons. Both got jobs in the bank and earned good salary, sustaining life with no problem. The widow had only one desire left, and that was to get both her sons married to daughters of rich businessmen so that they would get good dowry and their days would pass happily. Both the boys were so virtuous, respectful, set in their jobs and straightforward, so it was not impossible to have her desire fulfilled. The mother arranged her elder son's engagement with a girl from a well-to-do with family. It was decided that the new daughter-in-law would bring in dowry of a determined amount with her. The mother had lived a very hard life and had not seen even a quarter of that amount at one time before. So for her, the thought that the daughter-in-law would bring such a large sum at one go was so exciting that she would slip into a golden world of dreams. Late Pujyapad Gurudev Sri Bhuvan Bhanu Surishwarji Maharaj Sahib describes sansar in the following words. Sansar is that where many imagined and unimagined events occur. His words came true. There was a raid at the bride's home just before the marriage and the father incurred a loss. All his capital was wiped out. The marriage took place at the appointed time, but the father of the bride failed to bring the dowry. The mother's dream was shattered. All her expectations and dreams came to nothing. However, there was nothing that she could do. The daughter-in-law entered the house but was unable to make a place for herself in the mother-in-law's heart, which was then filled with dislike and a hidden hatred for her. Undoubtedly, the daughter-in-law was very cultured, quiet, and virtuous. She loved her mother-in-law from the heart and served her more than even a daughter would. She was enthusiastic about the household chores and even dexterous at them. Despite having so many qualifications, she was unable to win over her mother-in-law's heart because her mother-in-law failed to see any good in her. She could only think of how her hopes for a good dowry were destroyed. The learned tell us, do not have any expectations, because even if one expectation is bespattered, we will fail to notice the other good things. We will not be able to appreciate the uprightness of a person, nor will be able to have a bond of affection with him. After some time, the younger son got married. His wife brought in dowry even higher than that determined for the elder daughter-in-law. The mother's expectation was more than fulfilled. Just for that reason, the younger daughter-in-law became the mother-in-law's favorite. As a result, the mother-in-law became partial towards her. From morning till evening, all the chores had to be done by the elder daughter-in-law. If she was resting for even a little while, she would be scolded. Why are you lying down? Clean the vessels. If her friends came to visit her, she would be insulted in their presence with bitter words and be told, "Send your friends away. They seem to have nothing better to do. If you keep gossiping, who will cook?" As for the younger daughter-in-law, she had brought a large sum of money with her, so she was treated like a queen. all the important things which would bring honor to the family would be performed by her. If some auspicious function had to be attended, or if an invitation for two persons had been received, it was the younger couple which would be given the opportunity. The younger daughter-in-law's parental family was welcomed with much enthusiasm, but if the elder daughter-in-law's family visited, they were made to feel unwanted. Everyone could see this bias. However, the elder daughter-in-law was cultured and was well conversant with the science of karma and had imbibed it. She understood that what was happening was only due to her own evil karmas. Nothing untoward that happened in her life was attributed to her mother-in-law. She had devotion for her mother-in-law. Therefore, she did not feel belittled even when the mother-in-law made her perform unpleasant or burdensome tasks. Anand Ganji's averment that man sadhyo tene sagalo sadhyo, meaning a person who has attained self-discipline and control over his mind has attained everything, is proven by 100% here. Along with the elder daughter-in-law, even the elder son was being neglected. The mother was inclined to be partial to the younger son. The elder son started noticing this behavior. He had not absorbed the science of karma to be able to bear this partiality. The result, agitation and hatred occupied his mind. The reverence and respect he held for his mother disappeared. For the elder daughter-in-law, injustice was a daily occurrence. The elder son used to be vexed by this. At these instances, the elder daughter-in-law would pacify him. The son used to blame his mother, while his wife would blame herself. Both would have long discussions about these matters. "Son, you are so obedient and follow her bidding. How are you then to blame?" "Daughter-in-law, my fault is that my karmas are evil." "Son, how is that?" "Daughter-in-law, if my sins were not wicked, my father would have been able to present the dowry and then mother would have loved me equally." "Son, that is fine, but mother is being unfair even to me. What is my fault?" "Daughter-in-law, even your karmas are sinful." "Son, how are my karmas sinful?" "Daughter-in-law, if they were not evil, wouldn't you also have married a wife who brought a large dowry?" Yet, the husband was unable to imbibe in his heart his wife's convincing advice, and thus agitation and agony became his fate. One day, some sweetmeats were sent over to the house. The better ones were kept by the mother for the younger couple, whereas the ordinary ones were given to the elder daughter-in-law. The elder son could not bear this. He said, "Mother, I have watched you being partial for a very long time. If you want to continue in the same manner, we will have to separate out." The elder daughter-in-law was appalled to hear this. She said, "What are you saying? How can you talk about separating from the mother who bore you in her womb for 9 months, who raised you, educated you, and gave you good values? One must not think like this." On hearing this, the husband started thinking his wife received no appreciation from his mother, even after toiling all day. In fact, she had to bear all her abuses. On the other hand, mother never tired of lauding the younger daughter-in-law who lived like a queen. This was a daily occurrence, yet his wife's composure, keenness for work, and her reverence for his mother remained unchanged under any circumstance. He used to talk to her, "Why do you bear all this?" The wife would reply, "Where am I bearing anything? All this comes naturally to me because I have adjusted myself." "Why do only you have to adjust and not mother?" "This is because mother is our mother. Don't we have to adjust to her?" This matter needs to be understood. The eyes do not have to adjust to the pain of spectacles. It is the other way around because, one, the eyes already existed, spectacles came later. Two, one does not choose the eyes, but one chooses the pair of spectacles. Similarly, one, your mother has been around right from your birth. The wife enters your life at a later stage. Two, you cannot choose your mother, but you can choose your wife. Therefore, the chosen wife has to conform to your mother. This means that it is the wife who has to change so as to fit in and not the mother. The wife was calm because she did not see the mother's fault and had learned from the golden motto of life, in any situation, learn to adapt. the husband became uneasy and restless and therefore talked about separating because he saw the mother's fault in everything. He himself failed to learn to adjust. The learned say, when an act is performed with a specific feeling, then that act becomes instrumental in intensifying that feeling. Time and again, the mother had shown inequality between the two sons, resulting in the elder son developing a dislike and disrespect for his mother in his heart. So when he again broached the topic of separating, the mother welcomed it. Despite the elder daughter-in-law's displeasure and disagreement, the house was partitioned. The mother started to live with a younger son and his wife. On the very first day, the younger daughter-in-law went in for a nap without cleaning the utensils. The mother told her, "First clean the utensils, then go to sleep later." "Mother, I am not used to doing it. I am going for a nap." Such chores used to be done by the elder daughter-in-law. That day, the mother had to do it. At 4 p.m., the daughter-in-law woke up and got ready to go out. "Beta, where are you going?" "To a friend's place." "But what about dinner?" "I am having dinner at my friend's place and your son has an office dinner to attend." "But what about me?" "There are khakras in the house. Make your tea and have the khakras with it." The next day, mother told the daughter-in-law, "Beta, these clothes have to be washed." "Ba, I'm not used to doing these chores. Why don't we keep a servant?" "Beta, our income is not that big. How will we manage with this smaller salary?" "But Ba, I have bought a big dowry with me. We will pay the servants from that amount." The younger daughter-in-law did not know reverence, affection, or hard work. She wanted to live a life which she was used to in a parental home. The mother started worrying. How long would it take to exhaust the dowry amount? She felt sick, worrying about the financial situation. The son was very particular about administering the medicines. However, the daughter-in-law had not learned that just by administering the medicines, one could not cure her disease. "Beta, I have to take the medicines 4 times a day. Please give them to me at an appropriate time." "Ba, I have kept them on the table next to you. Keep taking them at a fixed time." At the time of taking medicines, the mother called out the daughter-in-law. "Beta, can you give me some water for the medicines?" "I'm leaving a pot of water for you. Do not constantly call on me." The younger daughter-in-law had not learned to serve anyone. She was lost in her own world. Till then, the mother had not conveyed the news of her illness to her elder son and daughter-in-law. However, the daughter-in-law somehow found out and she immediately visited to inquire about her health. She brought ukalas from her house and somehow managed to finish her household chores to come and sit beside her mother-in-law for entire days. She would talk very sweetly to her, would press her legs and see to all her needs. Slowly, the mother started recovering and one day was absolutely fine. She bowed down to her daughter-in-law with tears in her eyes. "Mother, what are you doing? Why do you cry so?" "Beta, I did not recognize your good virtues. I harassed you a lot, said bitter and harsh words to you. How can one compare your greatness with my pettiness? Please forgive me." "Mother, why do you ask for forgiveness?" "It was my karma which harassed me and not you. Where does the question of forgiveness arise?" Truly, she had never seen her mother-in-law's fault in any of her afflictions. Therefore, she did not harbor a grudge or complaint for her mother-in-law in any corner of her heart. The mother said, "I have to make a request. Will you accept it?" "Mother, you do not have to make a request. You just have to bid, and we as children just have to obediently follow your command. Tell me whatever you wish." "Beta, my wish is that this partition should be removed." "Yes, mother, it shall be done at once. Why delay a good deed?" People who stay calm and collected in this life achieve a beautiful outcome. And what about in the lives to come? Let us now enunciate this doctrine to learn about the grand rewards bestowed by nature in our lives to come by citing Naketu's example.